Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Welcome to the Independence Day edition of the Steve Jones Show for this 4th of July holiday. Steve, no doubt outside the Sunbury Motors Studio today, enjoying some hamburgers, hot dogs, barbecue, chicken, and what have you out on the grill. We'll check in with Steve in just a few minutes here. This will be a best of Steve Jones show for the most part. Give you a chance to hear some of the interviews you may have missed over the last couple of weeks, including Coach Bill O'Brien and the starting quarterback, newly named starting quarterback for the Penn State Nittany Lions, Matt McGloin. It seems though we're about a month away from the start of Penn State football practice, so it seemed only right that we talk a little Penn State football here to start off the Independence Day edition of the Steve Jones Show. And Steve, as I said, will be in the Sunbury Motors studio in just a few minutes. The Sunbury Motors studio, sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And we also remind you that all of our interviews on the phone are available via the Lenape Solar hotline. Visit them at lenapesolar.com to find out more. As I said, Coach Bill O'Brien sat down with Steve Jones and talked a little bit about their plans for summer as a coaching staff before practice officially gets underway in about a month.
You've met everybody. Now you're really working every day to get ready for the opener. How do you attack June, July before you get to camp?
June's a big month. We've had a bunch of staff meetings already, training camp staff meetings, recruiting meetings, preparation for Ohio and Navy and Virginia meetings. So we've really been working around the clock Monday through Friday this month of June. And then July will take some time off, and because everybody needs to recharge their batteries. We've all been going at it pretty good here for 4 or 5 months. So that's what we'll do in July, and then we'll come back ready to go the end of the month.
It's also camp month. Give us an idea of the value you place on the camps.
Camps are big because you get to meet these guys, talk to them, see them run around, evaluate their skill set, and at the end of the day, see what they're all about as competitors, as kids. And so it's really important that these camps take place. And our coaches have done an excellent job of getting the prospects to camp. We've had one camp a couple weeks ago that we had over 250 kids at, and then this camp coming up on the 16th, we'll have another really good turnout. So camps have been good.
Every coach has what they think is their own positional balance on their football team. So you have an idea of what your positional balance should be. In recruiting, have you at least started to migrate in that direction? Because it's going to take time.
Yeah, no question. Probably the very first thing that we did when I arrived here after the Super Bowl was to evaluate our current roster, not only in preparation for spring practice, but in preparation for our recruiting needs. And so we're on the track of trying to balance those numbers out, like you just said, and it'll probably take a couple of years to truly balance them out the way we want it. But we're taking it slow. We're doing our homework, and so far so good, and we just got to stay on track with recruiting as one team and making sure that we're all on the same page.
In the NFL, you're used to working with 53, probably 23 to 27 on an offense. You released your depth chart. Is that your at least your blueprint going in as to what your top 50 or 60 happen to be?
Yeah, no question. You know, the depth chart is really it's a reflection of a couple different things. Number one, I think we have some decent depth at certain positions. And number two, we've got some position battles that'll still take place in August. So along the offensive line, there's a couple position battles there. The tight end position, people have asked me about that a lot. We play a lot of different personnel groupings, so there could be four or five different tight ends that play during a game, and that's a pretty decent position for us. So those battles will take place during August, and they'll be fun to watch.
Also, at this time of the year, leadership manifests itself. Your guys, it's not just Fitz running through. Your guys have to be the ones saying, hey, follow me. Have you been able to get a gauge, naming Matt quarterback being one of them, get a gauge on the leaders that you have?
No question. I would say, you know, the senior class that we have here is really a bunch of good leaders. We've got some guys in that class that have really stepped up in spring practice and stepped up so far in the summertime to show really good leadership qualities. And we're counting on that class to really have a good year for us as far as leadership goes. And a lot of those guys are going to play meaningful minutes for us. So we've got to have good players there too. And so far they've really taken a bull by the horn and done it.
And you've talked about already Matt McGloin, Paul Jones, and then of course Boldy being third at this stage. Fans may not understand. It's very difficult getting two ready, let alone one.
you definitely can't get three ready. You can evaluate as best you can in the spring, and that's what we did with three getting equal reps. And we did that. We all three of those guys got equal reps. Now we headed into training camp, and we've got to have a starter. And Matt definitely has earned that starting position. He's got to continue to earn it every day. And Paul got better as the spring went on. And so Paul's number two. And as we move forward into training camp, both those guys know that they have to play well to keep those spots, but they've earned it to this point.
Without even putting a DVD in, if I were to ask you about the Miami Dolphins defense, you could tell me chapter and verse scheme and also tendencies of guys. You now have to learn 12 teams and probably 300 in personnel tendencies that you had not known about before. At this stage, how do you divvy up duties like that beyond what you have to do?
Well, again, you really depend on your staff, and we've got a very experienced staff. We've got a bunch of really good graduate assistants that have really knocked out a lot of work on our first three opponents, which has been encouraging to see how well they worked, our GAs. So we're well ahead of where I've been in the past at this point in time on the first two games. And so, again, we've got to keep studying and keep preparing. And those opponents, those first three opponents are really, those are tough teams. So starting with Ohio, which is an excellent football team with a great head coach in Frank Solich. So we're doing a good job of keeping up with it, but we've got to continue that and then take some time off in July and then get back after it when we get back.
Finally, I know in basketball, a couple coaches do this. They'll take an assistant coach, and it's their scout. It's their scout. It's that scout. In football, can you do that? Can you assign a scout to an assistant coach? Do you go about it that way, or is it really the GAs?
Each coach on the staff is in charge of a team, if that makes sense. Meaning, every guy on our staff, including the graduate assistants, will have a team that they're in charge of from a scouting perspective, whether it's newspaper articles or whatever it may be, scheme, watching tape, any tendencies. So that's the way we divide that up. And then obviously the coaches on the staff have their individual responsibilities for their side of the ball. So that's the way it's going to go. And right now our staff's really bought into that and working well on that.
Steve Jones talking to Coach Bill O'Brien of the Penn State Nittany Lions as we get ready for practice to begin here officially in just about a month. This is the Best of the Steve Jones Show Independence Day Edition. We had an interview with Matt McGloin, as Steve had Matt McGloin on the Lenape Solar Hotline a few weeks ago after he was newly announced as the starting quarterback. We'll get his reaction to that and how he prepares himself for this upcoming season, his final campaign as a Penn State Nittany Lion. That's all coming up here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915, partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Hearn this Independence Day, spending time with you. We'll check in with Steve in a few moments from the Sunbury Motors studio as he's enjoying a little bit of grilling time outside, I would imagine. A couple of days ago, Steve Jones caught up with Matt McGloin on the Lenape Solar Hotline and chatted with the starting quarterback of the Penn State Nittany Lions, the newly announced starting quarterback for the Penn State Nittany Lions.
Fitz, as you guys working pretty hard at this stage, it's also a time of the year where leadership for individuals has to come out. You're one of the seniors on this team. What's it been like the way Fitzy's been running things so far?
Well, it's definitely been a challenge for us. Every workout has been extremely difficult and intense. We're getting after it. Hard 4 days a week with doing some actually football work on Wednesday, which would be our 7-on-7 day. We have you know, we're running a lot of hills. We're doing a lot of sprint work. You know, Friday, which is today, was our competition day, which, you know, we compete against you know, the other players and things like that for a point system, which we created that you know, allows you to see where you're at, and overall it makes you compete each and every day, and you know, allows you to get better. And so, but we're having a great time with it. We just finished up week six today, so we're excited for this little couple of days off that we have next week, and we'll be ready to pick things back up in a week.
There's things in the offense that you had before that worked very well for you. What are some elements in this offense that really fit you and work well for you?
Well, I feel extremely comfortable in this offense, and the reason for that is I kind of am able to make a lot of the decisions for the offense myself out there. I'm you know, it's up to the quarterback to get into the right play, to get your protection right, and to make sure everybody is exactly where they need to be. And that's something that, you know, I'm always so comfortable with. That's kind of how my high school offense was a little bit. I was able to, you know, get out of a play or change to a pass or run or things like that. So I feel very comfortable with the offense. I think that's why. And I'm able to command the offense, and I know it well. I think that's why I was able to win it in the spring.
During the course, though, of the learning curve of this, when you go in with Rob, Paul, Shane, the other quarterbacks, give us an idea of what, quote, the crash course was like before you got to the spring, and then once you were going through spring, what that part of the crash course was like.
Well, it's definitely a challenge. You know, the first few practices, you don't know where you stand, and you know, you're splitting reps with guys. You're standing back there for, you know, maybe 8-10 plays at a time. You just have to stay loose and make the most of every rep that you get, and make the most of your opportunities. And you know, this spring, which is again the reason I believe I won the job, was because all I did was just try to manage the offense and take what the defense gave me out there. I mean, maybe that's not something I've done in the past, which is why I've always been battling, but I just really felt comfortable with what we were doing. And, you know, after I realized I won the job right around the 9th or 10th practice, obviously he didn't announce it, but you get more and more comfortable with the offense, and you're just able to stop thinking about, you know, the offense, and you just start playing again.
Yeah, the playing part of it means it has to become second nature to you. When you get into the meeting room, what's that like as you go through various things that you had not gone through before, because you know the plays and the terminology are all different?
Absolutely, yeah. And at first, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said my head wasn't spinning, and it seemed like, you know, Coach O'Brien and Coach Fisher were speaking a different language to me. But you know, once you start to sit down and actually, you know understand what they want to do and what they're trying to accomplish in this offense, it does become easy to you. And you know, I'm not at that point yet. You know, I've been doing a lot of work with the film work, and especially focus on my protections. That's the one thing I want to handle as of right now, and get before camp time. But once you honestly sit down and understand what he wants out of it, it becomes a very simple offense.
How many hours a day do you think you've been spending just going through it over and over and over again in your mind, away from the field?
Well, the funny thing about that is I was thinking about it the other day. We I just started, you know, going a lot more with the offense and watching film and, you know, watching the Patriots and, you know, seeing what they're doing, and we're going to try to do the same things. But you kind of think about it all night, and, you know, you're laying in bed and you think about it as well, because it's something you're free to forget. And, you know, you kind of try to stop and, you know, try to get yourself to just, you know, relax and know that you have to trust that you're going to understand the offense and remember it. So,
you have graduated. You picked up your degree in May, which means, of course, you'll have to take graduate school courses in the fall. Have you settled yet on what you want to do with graduate school and how many credits?
Yeah, correct. I finished up in May, and I've actually decided to get another degree. I only need to take 4 classes, which would be 12 credits to get that degree. So hopefully by December I'll have a degree number 2.
Oh, so you're going to take 12 credits.
Yes, yeah.
I'm surprised by that. Okay, because some guys take 6, and that's fine. And I was going to ask the next question of being, since you would have a quote lighter course load, will that make it easier? But it sounds like you're going to have a heavy course load during the course.
Yeah,
of the fall.
I don't mind it too much. You know, I've been balancing, you know, academics and athletics for the past 4 years here now, so I'm kind of used to it. So you know, we figured why not, and just try to get the second degree, try to get as much as I can while I'm here.
Now, the communications is the first one.
Yeah.
What's the second one going to be in?
Well, the first one was in journalism. I'm going to try to take your job one day.
you're getting closer by the minute.
But no, the second one's going to be in telecommunications, so I'm going to try to stick with communications here.
Oh, okay. Very nice. Very nice. All right, now let's get to the working with the receivers part. You've talked about the protections part. You have, for the most part, guys that you have been around before. I know that helps, but still, give us an idea of the relationship that you and the other quarterbacks have been developing with the receivers as all of you are on the same learning curve.
Right. It was tough at first in the spring. I mean, you know, those guys are learning it just as we are, and it is tough. It's, you know, guys are going to be changing their routes depending on what coverage the defense is in. It's a lot of different terminology, a lot of different words, a lot of different, you know, adjustments. If a quarterback's hot during his protection, you know, the wide receiver needs to know that he needs to adjust his route shorter so I can throw it to him hot. It's definitely a lot. The quarterbacks and wide receivers need to be on the same page at all times. And, you know, we're not just going out there and just throwing random routes. We're you know, using our signals each day. We're trying to communicate with each other. And that so far, things have gone really, really well. And, you know, hopefully we can put it all together come camp time.
When you were up in Scranton in high school and you're going through your junior and senior years, what were your dreams? What were your dreams then about what you would hope when you were a junior and senior in high school about the next level?
You know, you definitely, you know, one day, you know, I'd be lying if I was just like a real high school kid. You wanted to play, you know, obviously professional with football, baseball, or basketball, whatever it would be. And, you know, that's something you definitely did think about. But in high school, I kind of, to be honest with you, didn't have time to stop and think where I was headed with my college career or anything like that. I went from football, and, you know, 2 days after we lost in football, I was playing in basketball games. And, you know, once our basketball run ended, I went right into baseball. So I kind of didn't, you know, stop to think about where I was headed. I kind of just enjoyed, you know, playing different sports. And so, I mean, but when it ended, I was kind of, like, when it started to get close, I kind of needed to make some decisions here, which I really hadn't had to do before. So it was definitely difficult there towards the end.
What was it like for you? I've always found that guys that play multiple sports is such a great, well-rounded experience for them. What did you get out of the other sports that actually, and even as a competitor, what did you get out of the other sports that actually helped you in your football career?
Well, it definitely makes you a better athlete. You know, you're doing a football workout, then you move into basketball, you're doing basketball workouts, and then you're going right into baseball, and you're doing different things for baseball. So it makes you overall just a better athlete. But at the same time, you're understanding you're working with different coaches, you're working with different players and different kids that have different attitudes. So, you know, you're not only, you know, you have to adjust to the game, but you also have to adjust to the attitudes that are associated with the game. So it kind of, you know, prepared me for, you know, different coaches, different types of players. And that's something I'm very fortunate that, you know, I was able to do in high school. And it's definitely, you know, made me a better player because of it.
You came here as a walk-on, and you've had to earn everything that you've been able to get along the way. Being a walk-on in the end, mentally, what was the benefit of being a walk-on, even though initially, mentally, it's not easy?
It was definitely frustrating. You know, there are times that where, you know, you kind of realize that things weren't going to work out. And my mother always told me that, you know, stay focused and that God works with a crooked stick. And that's something I really never forgot. And
I can hear your mother saying that, right, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, if it wasn't for my mother, my father, and my brothers, that I kind of may not have been in this position that I'm in today. I kind of was for them that I kind of just stuck it out. And I kind of just didn't want to go back home with, you know, my tail between my legs. I didn't want to let other people win. I kind of just wanted to buckle down and prove that I was capable of being a starter for Penn State.
You also know that when you get to camp, you're going to have to earn it every day. Give us the idea, the mentality of knowing, because you have two excellent quarterbacks, and Shane's right there too, and Paul and Rob, and you have great respect for all of them, but you know that you have to earn it every day. What kind of mental edge does that give you, knowing you have to earn it every day?
It's exciting for me. I mean, knowing that you're the guy, you know, but at the same time, you can lose it at any second. And, you know, especially with Coach O'Brien, you know, I mean, for myself, I want to go out there and I want to just absolutely put on a show during our camp. I want to, you know, not only make him feel comfortable, but make all the coaches and all the players feel comfortable knowing that, hey, this is our guy. He made the right decision. There's no turning back. There's no other guy we want in that position. You know, he runs the offense well. He makes the right reads. He makes the right plays. You know, he's not trying to do too much, and he's a leader, and he can lead this team. And all I want is for them to see that and to have their respect on the field.
Knowing that for most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, that number 25 is lining up behind him, is in some ways is he a quarterback's best friend?
Absolutely. I mean, Silas is such a rare athlete to have. I mean, you don't come across a running back like him too often. He's a great person as well. But in football terms, you know, he's kind of, you know, the guy that, you know, if, you know, I can't look for somebody downfield or anything like that, he's, you know, always in the back of my head, like, dump it off to Silas. You know, he's worked so much. He's come such a long way on catching a football that he's going to be, you know, such a major threat for us and running the ball and catching, especially in this offense.
Coach O'Brien has made the decision that they'll have game captains along the way. In other words, a lot of players will have to assume the mantle of leadership. When you look on this team, especially as you go through these summer workouts where leadership manifests itself, I mean, leadership manifests itself in the summer workouts when the coaches aren't around. What kind of leadership do you see on this football team from your fellow seniors?
Oh, each senior we have has truly stepped up and been that guy that, you know, at different times. You know, I can't just sit here and name, you know, three guys that are just the clear-cut leaders of this team. That's not how it works for us. You know, Coach Robert is doing the right thing and naming a captain or different captains for each game, because we have so many leaders on this team that it's hard to just pick a couple of guys. You know, so many guys have, you know, that respect that they deserve, you know, to be a captain either one game or a few games. And, you know, it's so much like we become such a family because of it that it's something you don't come across too often, and it's really great to see.
Gauge the attitude of this football team at this stage, especially with your senior year coming up. What do you see in your teammates as you get ready for camp and the excitement for the upcoming season?
Well, we're definitely on a mission. Each day has been better than the past day. We're not looking into the past, but we're building and we're getting better each and every day. It's hard for me to sit here and, you know, think of one day where we took a step back. Maybe we're not, you know, getting a lot of credit or the credit we deserve, but, you know, people don't think we're going to beat a lot of teams, but we're not going to be surprised if we go out there and beat those teams. We're putting in so much work. I'm not going to say here that we're working harder, you know, or we're working the best. We're beating everybody in the country, but we're gonna be in those games, and we're gonna have the opportunity to win all those games, and that's happening because of right now. This team is working so hard after 6 weeks, and hopefully we don't, you know, take a step back, and we can continue to build on it right up into camp and right up into Ohio.
But then again, isn't that a microcosm of you? Never really given a lot of credit.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for the time you gave us today. Appreciate that. If you could hold off on taking my job for a period of time, I would greatly appreciate that, because I really do like this job.
No problem, yeah.
Okay. Matt McGloin, starting quarterback for the Nittany Lions, joining us here on WKOK on the Lenape Solar Hotline. We'll come back with more after this on WKOK.
Homeowners and business owners, listen up. What if you could make an investment in something that will never lose its incredible value? Invest in the most abundant commodity there is, the sunshine. Lenape Solar can show you how an investment in a photovoltaic or solar thermal energy system can pay you back through saving money and energy with a great rate of return. In fact, an investment in solar energy pays it forward to your great-grandchildren and to the planet's future. Lenape Solar is your trusted local source for solar energy and energy efficiency solutions. Experts in renewable energy legislation and incentives with professional and certified installers. Take the path towards energy independence by investing in solar energy with Lenape Solar. This is Tanya Diddy, and I invite you to schedule your free energy consultation today by calling 570-286-1496, visiting Lenape Solar at 140 South 2nd Street in Sunbury, or find us online at lenapesolar.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. As we have the best of the Steve Jones Show for this July 4th holiday, Kevin Herr, as the man said, filling in for Steve Jones, who, by the way, will be with us next hour for a few short minutes as he takes a break from all the grilling and festivities here on the 4th. A reminder that our Lenape Solar Hotline will be reactivated again tomorrow for your toll-free calls at 800-795-9565, 800-795-9565. You can email Steve too, stevejones@wkok.com. John Schaefer from the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs joined Steve Jones on the Lenape Solar Hotline recently. And now, as part of the Best of the Steve Jones Show, we have that interview once again.
Very pleased to have with us on the show today, from the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, the outstanding play-by-play voice, and also in charge of media relations, John Schaefer. John, welcome to the show.
Steve, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, the Phillies and Lehigh Valley. They will affectionately refer to it as the Allentown to Philadelphia shuttle. Give us an idea of how many transactions so far have taken place between the two.
It's amazing because of obviously all the injuries that the Phillies have had. We're up to 61 total transactions this year. Now, not all of those, of course, involved the Phillies, some guys coming up from AA, but it's been a revolving door. I mean, the Phillies have not been able to stay healthy, and that's impacted our roster significantly, and I think more so than at any point in the first the 5 years we've been here.
Give us an idea, talent-wise, what do you think of the talent you have in this AAA team here, and do you think there is some potential major league talent along the way that if the Phillies wanted to tap into it, they could?
You know, it's a good question, Steve. It's been a very good team. It's guided by second-year manager Ryan Sandberg, of course, the Hall of Famer, of course, part of the infamous Phillies deal with Chicago many years ago at this point. When you look at what the roster entails, you know, I think there's some terrific young pitching talent on this roster. You look at a couple of guys that came over the Cliff Lee deal, beginning to shine through, like Filippo Mont, a big 6'7 reliever that throws hard, has good secondary pitch in a curveball. J.C. Ramirez is now up in AAA. He also came over in that Cliff Lee deal. So there's some really good young relievers, I think, in the organization that are shining through. In terms of offensive prospects, Dominic Brown is still considered one of the top prospects in this organization. He's been hampered by injuries as well. The injuries haven't only been in Philadelphia. They've been here, too. When he's healthy, he's hit. But right now, he's got a strained knee. He's had a hamstring injury. So right now, he's actually on the DL. So, you know, bits and pieces are showing through, but injuries have affected this team as well.
I saw Dominic Brown begin his professional career because he played at Williamsport, and I saw him several times against State College. You could see he was a marvelous, probably four-tool talent in this game. When he is on his game, what do you see from him, plus and minus?
You know, I've never seen – when we first saw him come through in 2010, he was probably the biggest prospect, not just in the system but in all of baseball. And I had never seen a player – and I've been doing minor league games now for 10 years, with as quick hands as he has. He gets his wrist through the zone so effortlessly. He has majestic home runs. And he's somewhat wiry. He's bigger now. He's bulked up. He's stronger. But when he pulls the ball, he gets tremendous power out of his frame. And he can also hit line drives to the opposite field. Like you said, he's an athlete. He has the tools of being just an athlete. You know, he looks like even a football player, looks like a wide receiver. He actually had signed with Miami to play wide receiver before the Phillies, offered him money and he signed with the Phillies. So I think when everything's going perfectly, he's capable of being an outstanding hitter and an outstanding hitter for power. What he is still learning, and I think he would tell you, is that he switched from right field to left field last year in that Hunter Pence acquisition. So he had to readjust to an entirely new outfield position. And there was an adjustment period, but I think we've seen him make strides playing left and now even center here in 2012. So, you know, he's had a couple of opportunities with the Phillies. He's technically not a rookie as he has enough service time in the major leagues, but I still think he plays a large role going forward, you know, depending on what happens with free agency, someone like a Shane Victorino. He's certainly in the Phillies' plans long-term, I would say.
There's a player in A-ball that I like a lot named Jeremy Barnes, a shortstop out of Notre Dame. On the double-A level, two guys I really like, Cesar Hernandez, the second baseman, and the catcher, Sebastian Baez. With you at Triple-A, that one that's a heartbeat away from getting to the major leagues, a couple of younger guys that are new to the Triple-A level that you look at and you see something in them that makes them a special player.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think Steve Susdorf, who's come up as an outfielder, and he's just hit. You know, he's a younger guy, mid-20s, was hitting in Double-A. Hit 339 last year in Double-A, has come up here and he's hit over 300. And he's one of those under-the-radar guys. You don't necessarily see him in top 10 prospect lists. But when guys perform at the Double-A level, guys perform at the Triple-A level, you play them every day. Sometimes you just force the hand of the parent club. I think Steve Susdorf could be someone like that. In terms of a guy that has gone back and forth and is a good story also is a Telford, Pennsylvania product, Eric Kratz, who's a veteran catcher who's gone back and forth. He's just rejoining the Iron Pigs tonight. He was actually with the Phillies because Carlos Ruiz was a bit shaken up but did not go on the DL. He's got tremendous power. He's an outstanding catcher at this level. I think he'd be on most major league rosters as a number two catcher. That doesn't present itself right now with Philadelphia. But he's a guy that I think could help the Phillies as well at some point later this year, depending on health of the catching position.
And we talk confidence in the minor leagues is usually on a pitch-by-pitch basis.
Mm-hmm.
You have players that they go up, they get a feel and a taste for being in the show, then they get sent back down. Give us an idea in a generalization what the attitude of the players happen to be at AAA that you deal with on an everyday basis because it is such an up-and-down feeling at this level.
Yeah, it is, Steve. You know, it's such a unique level because it's the cusp no matter which way you're going. If you're going up, you're on the cusp of, you know, being back up. If you're coming down as a veteran, you still feel like you want that one additional opportunity. It traditionally can be a tough level for players to play at because you're so close to the major leagues. We're very fortunate, again, in having Ryan Sandberg as our manager because when you have a manager that's in the Hall of Fame, that in itself is such a rarity. But you're not going to get a lot of excuses out of the players because it kind of starts with the manager. You know, it starts with Ryan and then trickles down. So I think because of that, he's kind of instilled all we do is put in, you know, all the effort. You know, we put in 100% and the rest takes care of itself. I've really felt that the last 2 years here. This team has played hard. You don't necessarily always get that day in, day out in minor league baseball, especially in AAA. This team is a team that does play hard. There's no doubt. There's highs and lows. You have guys performing extremely well going up, not performing as well as they'd like. They come back down. So maybe a little bit of your confidence could be broken or shaken. And, that's an adjustment that they constantly go through in AAA. Same could be said for the lower levels. You go up and you get tested, and sometimes you have to come back down. But we have had a lot of guys, you know, go back and forth and have some success doing that. And that's not easy to do, and I think it speaks a lot to what Ryan Sandberg's been able to do.
I want to talk now about Ryan Sandberg because he badly wanted the Cubs job, and he was very open about how badly he wanted the Cubs job. What do you see in him that allows him to be an effective manager on this level that will then open the door for him to be the major league manager he's dreamed of being?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because he's not a lot of guys with his credentials as a player, I think, would want to manage, would want to kind of go about it again the hard way from single A to double A to triple A and eventually maybe a chance at the major leagues. But he's done it the right way. You know, he's done it now for 6 years. He's had very good teams in both the Cubs and Phillies system. He was the Pacific Coast League Manager of the Year a couple of years ago. You know, of course, as a player, 10-time All-Star, we all know, drafted by the Phillies, later dealt to the Cubs. The rest is history, him becoming a Hall of Famer. I just think that he is willing. What a lot of people aren't willing to do in all walks of life is kind of put in the time and effort. He says, I need to learn how to become a good manager. And I think he's done that over the course of now hundreds and hundreds of games. He's extremely well-respected, so I think he'll do a good job at the clubhouse. He's regarded as a player's manager. He gets a lot of guys in. You know, on a 25-man roster, he doesn't just sit people. He wants everyone to be fresh. He takes advantage of double switches, defensive replacements, pinch running. So he gets everyone involved, and I think that makes kind of everyone be a little more attentive to his message. And, you know, 2 years here, we were 16 games over 500 last year and in the postseason for the first time ever. And this year, you know, you cross your fingers at the halfway point, we're 10 games over 500, so hopefully heading to another postseason spot.
We were talking with John Schaefer, the outstanding play-by-play voice of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, the AAA affiliate of the Philadelphia Phillies, and he's also in charge of media relations for the Iron Pigs as well. We're discussing manager Ryan Sandberg of the Iron Pigs back for his second year there. His greatness as a player certainly transcends. It's obvious that he commands instant respect the second a player deals with him.
That there's no doubt about it. And you don't always get that, again, at this level. That's what makes this level a little bit more unique. I think at some of the other levels, as guys come up through systems, they're somewhat naive to who might be in charge of them. You know, they're just kind of going about it the way they've been told to go about it. But once you have guys with, you know, 5 years of major league service, 10 years of major league service, 10 plus years of minor league service, some guys just want to do it their way. But again, if it starts with someone like, you know, Ryan Sandberg, who, again, is in the Hall of Fame, won a National League MVP, was the first Cub MVP since Ernie Banks. I mean, all these remarkable things. There's so much uniqueness about Ryan Sandberg, and the fact that he's managing here is unique in itself. Because here's a guy that was drafted by the Phillies that has come back to the organization. And he will get a shot. I truly believe he'll get a shot to manage in the major leagues in the near future. I think he had a couple of chances this past offseason, interviewed for the Cardinals job. Like you said, I think was hoping for more serious consideration with the Cubs a couple of years ago. But that right spot, right time is coming sooner than later, I think, for Sandberg.
What about the rest of the staff? Because Ryan Sandberg certainly will delegate along the way.
We have a really good staff. Rod Nichols is a veteran pitching coach who's been in this organization a long, long time, former major league pitcher that's done a really good job throughout the years with guys that kind of need a tweak or a fix. He's been able to do that. In fact, we had Brett Myers come down here a few years ago needing to kind of get right, and he did. After he came down here, had a very good second half of the season with Philadelphia. And we have a veteran hitting coach by the name of Sal Rendi that's managed a lot in the minor leagues. And it's another guy that's just well-respected. And that's what this staff, I think, has. You have Sandberg, Rendi, and Nichols. A lot of guys with experience, veteran status, that the players, you know, really look up to and respect.
I think a lot of people looked at that Allentown-Bethlehem market for years and thought that would be a great minor league area. Give us an idea of how the area and the Valley has embraced the club and being the AAA affiliate of the Phillies after they were in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre for so many years.
Steve, it's unbelievable. I never knew what it would become. You know, I knew this was a passionate sports area. I'm from outside of Philadelphia. But this is an unbelievably passionate sports area, as I think we know from their passion for college athletics and maybe Penn State. But you got a lot of Philadelphia people, also a lot of New York people. And, of course, in that part of the country, you have a lot of people that love just sports in general, want to see a winner. We led minor league baseball in attendance last year. We led minor league baseball in attendance in 2010. Currently, we're leading minor league baseball in attendance, which is amazing because Allentown, Bethlehem, while it's been a great area for minor league baseball, it's certainly not the biggest AAA market in the country, nowhere near it, with cities like Sacramento and Charlotte and Indianapolis. It's worked out well. It's kind of it's not necessarily the only show in town, but in terms of live sports, it's not competing against a minor league hockey team or a pro sports team like Indianapolis or Charlotte would have. So it's a great facility. People love it. We average between 9,000 and 10,000 people a night. And, you know, hopefully it continues. But our fans have just been unbelievable.
And the same story there that I think we did an extensive series earlier this week at Medlar Field at Librado Park. That's single A, and Williamsport, single A as well. But you do very much the same things on the triple A level in that park as they do in the single A level between innings.
You're right. It's the exact same thing. And having spent some time working at A-ball in my career, I think what we found is, well, there's people that certainly love baseball and want to see, you know, the Dominic Browns and the next great pitching prospect and hitting prospect. There's just as many people that are there for fireworks or for affordability or for the bobbleheads, just for a good night, you know, as opposed to spending, you know, a few hundred dollars in Philadelphia, New York. What about spending, you know, $20 or $40 or $60 and a minor league game. And I think this area has been really receptive to that. We see, you know, new families all the time, people returning. But the same old staples, fireworks and dizzy bat races and bobbleheads, the things that have been a part of, you know, baseball at the lower levels, the higher levels for a long time, that's been a huge part of our success here. And I think that certainly will continue. That's a big reason why we've been able to draw, I think, with some of those promotions.
And also on AAA, John, that means you not only have to do the play-by-play, which is your passion, but you also have to be the media relations director. So give us an idea, you know, how you need to delegate your time so that you are competent at top level at both.
It's amazing because I think when you work in minor league baseball, there's just, it's cliche, they always say you wear a lot of hats, and it is true. I mean, whether it be you know, just printing out stats in the morning for coaches and media members, or trying to handle some media requests, or putting the tarp on the field. The same things that go on at State College, you know, are going on here in Allentown, even with a larger staff. And it can make for some long days. It can make for sometimes working on stuff not related to necessarily calling the game in the evening. So you have to spend your time wisely. You know, I need to prepare the way I know I need to prepare to be ready for a broadcast. But I also have to, you know, put in the time necessary to make sure that, you know, this organization runs well outside of, you know, the play-by-play of the baseball game in the evening. So I think over the course of just, you know, a few years of doing it, you figure out how to spend your time. You know, you'll have some long days and nights. You know, there'll be some rain delays and early mornings. And, you know, at the end of the day, say, you know, you work at a ballpark, and that's what I've always wanted to do, and that's, you know, that's good enough, and that's what keeps me in it and makes me enjoy it so much.
And the next part of that, though, John, would happen to be that since you're putting the game notes together, you're doing your preparation at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. That's so important. I think some people, you know, that don't have a background necessarily in what you and I have done, Steve, for a career is, you know, sometimes you don't realize what goes into the preparation for a broadcast, you know, how important putting together quality notes are, you know, how important that is to the process, how important it is, you know, doing the necessary research, talking to the right people, writing down the information that's important to you, you know, on a scorecard, getting ready for a baseball game. All of those things are so important. So I think especially in baseball, because baseball, you know, without the clock on the game, is you never know when you're in one of those nights where it's just one of those nights. It's 10-0. You're either winning or losing. It's the sixth inning. You don't know if you're in for a two-hour game or a four-hour game. So you need to put yourself in a position where you have enough material, you know, to get through it and to get through it well. And that's something that, you know, over years of just broadcasting games, you have good days, you have bad days, and you kind of figure it out. And that's something we still experience definitely up here.
We talked earlier about the 61 moves that have been made between the Phillies and the Iron Pigs. And that means several of the Iron Pigs have made that move to Philadelphia. They've been in the show, and when you're in the show, you travel by jet.
Mm-hmm.
When you're with the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, you don't. Give us an idea how grueling the travel is in AAA.
Yeah, you know, we are somewhat fortunate to be centrally located, but it's difficult. I mean, there's bus trips back from Louisville, Kentucky after a 7:05 game, and then a game the next night in Allentown. You know, that is a part of it. And that's a part that the players, I think, do well with, because these are veteran players and they have experience with the bus travel. Although, like you said, I mean, traveling on a jet from New York to L.A. or Philadelphia to L.A. is a much easier process for a player than busing. You know, you can get to L.A. in 5 or 6 hours. You can get on a bus, though, from Louisville to Allentown. It might take 11 or 12 hours. So you have a couple of those lengthy trips. And we have some of the somewhat centrally located, so we have some Syracuse and Rochester and Buffalo and Scranton-Wilkes-Barre trips in there that are more manageable, 3-, 4-, 5-hour trips. But every single player at this level has to deal with the, you know, hop on a bus for 10 hours, not really get a good night's sleep, get right back to the park, if even leave it when you arrive, and then play that night, and know that they're going to be judged on how they perform, whether that be the starting pitcher or the, you know, the 1-9 in the lineup. I mean, an 0-4 is an 0-4. Nobody cares if you travel back from Louisville or not. It still counts.
In fact, I thought of you a few weeks ago. I was watching on TV, and I believe the Iron Pigs were playing Gwinnett County on the road, and I thought, John and those guys have to travel back from there.
It's a long trip. Gwinnett is the farthest outpost south in this league. Actually, used to be in Richmond, Virginia. They recently moved to Gwinnett when the Braves got up and moved a few years ago. And yeah, I mean that's from Gwinnett to Allentown is quite a trip. It's even more of a trip from Gwinnett to Buffalo, New York, or Pawtucket, Rhode Island. So there's some serious trips, and this is even a better travel league than the Pacific Coast League, where you have stretching from New Orleans, Louisiana, to Tacoma, Washington, in the same league. It's just a remarkable amount of space, all kinds of flights and layovers. They even miss games every once in a while because luggage doesn't arrive or the teams don't arrive for the 705 first pitch. That will happen in the PCL. That doesn't happen in the International League, although 2 years ago it did happen. I believe Indianapolis never got out of Indianapolis for a game heading south, and they did miss a game in the south just because of travel. So that will happen in minor league baseball. You never hear about it in the major leagues.
All right, final question for you, John, before I let you go. Outside of your beautiful ballpark in Allentown, best park that you go to in the International League where you look forward to it and the one where you cringe just a bit?
Oh, you put me a little bit on the spot, but I really like Pawtucket's McCoy Stadium, which is an older ballpark, but in Pawtucket, being so close to Boston, it's a Providence suburb. They are there for the baseball. They love Boston Red Sox baseball. It's somewhat of a nostalgic feel. They pack it in the summer. They just love summer night. It's a typical New England summer night. Sun setting, not humid, 70-something degrees. Great place to watch a game and call a game from. A couple of the venues. There's some older venues. I think one that comes to mind is probably in Syracuse, New York, the Alliance Bank Stadium. It's not that it's a terrible venue. It's just there's not that many people there watching, a Chiefs game. And we've all been in one of those situations where you're calling a game and you literally feel like what you're saying they can hear on the mound. And that's one of those venues there. Even though you're probably a couple hundred feet from the mound or from the dugout. Each and every word you say, you feel like everyone can hear because there's just no one there on a lot of nights.
John, you do a great job, and thanks so much for the time you gave us. And we'll look forward probably a month from now from bringing you back on and hearing from you again.
That's great, Steve. I appreciate the time. Enjoy the afternoon.
All right. John Schaefer doing an outstanding job as the play-by-play voice of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Steve Jones Show. We'll come back with more after this.